Kilo Delta 2, Bravo November Golf, KO4LAO. Jim here. How are you this morning?
Your call sign sounds a little familiar. I'm sure I've talked to you. You have a good holiday, or just glad that's all over with?
We've talked before, I'm still in the middle of it. In fact, I'm headed to a local park here to take all the grandkids swinging.
You probably just took the rest of the week off.
Yeah.
You got together with the family and the grandkids and everyone else.
Right in the middle of that right now.
I can go anywhere, just sort of staying close to home.
Staying close to home is the deal.
As people do nowadays. What do they call it, a staycation? You know, pretend you're somewhere else. Pretend you're in some exotic foreign land and basically just stay, you know, sit in your living room.
We have, mostly the family just wants to visit and talk and eat. might as well do that at the house.
I mean, used to be everyone would go out to a big dinner somewhere, but I guess there's still some concerns over COVID or other problems. I really hate to be a restaurant owner these past 2 years. That would have been really, really sucky.
No, it's the price of food. I mean, you go out and eat, it's pretty expensive.
Too. I went to one Chinese takeout place in Lawrence, and let's see, I got a quart of wonton soup, pork fried rice, those Chinese spare ribs, and I think I paid over $30. And, you know, the spare ribs weren't even any good. They were basically the boneless ribs, which is basically all the shavings left over after we make the regular rack of ribs. And, yeah, it was just those three or four things. $30, $35 for this? No thanks. I can do my own Chinese pork spare ribs. I pretty much figured out the recipe for the sauce.
Yeah, right about that. My wife and I went to a barbecue place here recently. Just got two sandwiches and a soft drink apiece, and it was over $40.
Eat out, but this is recent, right? It wasn't like this, 2 years ago. The big increase in eating out just came within the past year or two. Because I don't remember paying that much for a rack of ribs and, what did I say, pork fried rice, a quart of wonton soup. That was pretty much about it. So I'm like, I could make this. Or something very much like it. It's pork ribs and, the appropriate sauce. Soy sauce, hoisin sauce, rice vinegar, ketchup. There's something called Chinese five spice. I don't know what it is. So I decided it tastes like cayenne pepper. So cayenne pepper and some honey, and it makes a reasonable approximation of the Chinese takeout spare ribs.
I think you're right about it, though. It's tough to be a restaurant owner these days with all the increase in food prices.
Food prices, I guess, just general inflation. That plus for a year or more, you basically couldn't open. Maybe except for takeout. And maybe in a few cases if you had an outdoor dining area. So, they lost a lot of business and I guess had to make it up in some way.
Yeah. Listen, I'm going to have to say 73 to you. I'm at my destination and, hope you have a good interims period here between Christmas and New Year's. So before you know it, it'll be 2023. This will be KO4LAO, clear on your finals.
KOKD2BNG. All right, 73. Thanks for the cues, though, however brief it may be. And you go be with your family and grandkids and enjoy, the rest of the holiday. 73s.
Good morning. I guess it's morning, 11:58. Hi, Phil. How you doing today? This is Gerald to you.
Good day. Just got back from the probate office and filed the thing for my dad's estate, and that wasn't due until January the 6th, I think, a week from tomorrow, maybe. But got that done, and now headed to Spartanburg to pay some real estate taxes.
You're having all the fun today, hogging it all up, aren't you?
And all my life.
From Arkansas, huh? Shoot. Well, we're up on Wade Hemp in front of the post office here in Taylor's. And Bernice and I are just headed back home and got a big load of groceries from Aldi's, as usual.
Good morning, Phil.
Well, I'm at North Pleasantburg and 385. I knew I was near to you. I'm copying you as strong on direct as I am through the repeater.
Good. I never look down at the radio when I'm driving, unless I'm stopped at a stoplight or something. I might, and that's rare. I'm scared to nowadays. Well, I talked to a nice gentleman in Vermont the other night for about 30 minutes or more. And just by accident, I heard Ariel on, and I broke in to wish him Merry Christmas. And then this gentleman called me, and at the last, Phil, I told him I was going to be 75 here next year. And he said, well, mine don't start with numbers anymore, Tom. It starts with an H. And I thought, oh, my. What a nice gentleman, and he sounded just as good as gold, and he was going to be 100 years old, Bill, or Phil.
Congratulations to him. Well, what band was that on?
On 80 meters at 3.717, and there'd been a net on there just before that, and he called me. And then they frequent 3.713. And he was just talking on a wire at 90 watts. I was talking on a wire, and I had left my amp on at 55. And so I looked over at the meter, and it was popping up and down around 800 to 900. Made me feel bad, so I turned it down.
Along with running a little power makes you feel good, doesn't it?
A lot of times, there's a lot of QSB, and there's a lot of static, and the static was pretty rough that night. And I'm not smart enough to get it all out. On CW, you can go to that noise reduction too on this Kenwood, and it's just phenomenal. But as far as the Knotts filters and that go, I do turn down the bandwidth a lot of times from sideband's about 2600. I'll turn it down as low as 1800, but it does distort the voices a little bit, but it clarifies it some. And if you turn the RF gain down a little bit and turn the preamp off, sometimes that helps too if it's just a conversation. I don't talk a lot of sideband. He called me, and they was having overall better weather in Vermont, and he was right there against the border by Quebec. And they were having overall warmer weather than we were having.
Ham radio is a great hobby to have when you get to be 100. Me and you might be talking when we're 100, but that's a big milestone for you next year. What month is that?
A couple of days off in January. It's on January. I don't put my date on QRZ. I don't know why. Privacy considerations nowadays. A lot of them do. But I worked a guy one year, Phil, that... there's a message from my daughter up in Michigan. And I had talked to him, and he didn't miss a beat on CW. And we were talking, probably 20 words a minute, nothing real fast. And his name was Jiggs on the radio, J-I-G-G-S, and he'd been a radio telegrapher for the railroad, and he was currently 99 years old, and he used a keyboard, because I told him, I said, fine business on your CW, it's great. He says, well, I've never used a keyboard before, Tom, but the arthritis is so bad, that's what I use now. And you don't forget conversations like that one.
Hey, that's probably a good way to go. And then I guess he copies it by ear. But he could copy it the same device that sends it out. He may copy CW for him.
Making one of those that really worked very well. Now, this GS590SG is set up that way, and it does as good as I've ever seen. And if I'm doing conversational CW, which is not too often, it'll pick up letters for me that I might miss and puts two and two together. But if you don't know CW, about the only thing they're good for is guys wanting to get CW confirmations that can't do CW. And they'll get to where they can recognize their call sign, but that's about the size of it. And I'm not making fun of that. It's just, that's the bare truth of the matter.
I'll tell you, I like to go on my cell phone and go to the ARRL site and get their code practice. Sometimes I'll do that driving down the road when I don't have an HF radio handy, and that's real good practice.
PR with W4NGU. Yes, sir. Dave Watson developed a program many years ago on cassette tapes for himself, if I remember right. And he was driving back and forth to Charlotte, and that's the way he got through his 20 words a minute to get the extra class. And you're absolutely right. I always recommend going to the ARRL websites. The best one I ever remember, Phil, and you probably never heard of it, you might have, was Jerry Ziliak, and he made CW tapes. And I think the one that really helped me the most after I learned CW some was code words. The most frequent words on there are spoken a whole lot in a QSO. And that really upped my speed a lot. But he was good, and I learned it on cassette tapes. But those daily broadcasts, I picked them up on 160 at, I think, 1.825, just as clearly as I do on any of the other bands that change throughout the day.
Tapes, too. I that might have been 1971 when I was going for my general, and that didn't help me too much because I quickly memorized them.
You're something else. Well, you're still good at it, I'll give you that. I enjoy it. I've made some very unusual contacts on it. I was on another one that comes to mind is I was on 17 meter sideband one day, and a guy come on there, and I thought I heard his breath, and I got his card. And he had bought a 17-meter handy talkie in Europe, and he said they don't make them over here. And he had it on a bicycle, and he had built his own amplifier, and he wanted to check it out. And he says, now, Tom, this is 4 watts, 4 watts, 4 watts, and you could hear him pumping that bicycle. And he says, now, this is 8 watts, I think it was. I don't remember the exact wattage, but it wasn't much, Phil. On a bicycle, mobile, on 17 meters, and like I say, they don't make handy talkies over here for 17 meters. At least they didn't back then.
I think I told you about the guy. I saw him again yesterday in Spartanburg. He's up and down Highway 9 all the time, but he's got a Suburban with a big flat roof, you know, and two great big coils, and the. I was certain they were CB coils, antennas, and So I saw him at Bojangles, and I walked over and I said, tell me about your radio. And he was running 1,000 watts mobile, a big homebrew solid state amplifier. And the guy needs to be an engineer somewhere. He said he just picked it up on his own and had no training. I'm not sure I believe that, because he sure did a beautiful job on that amp. But he had big alternators hooked up and everything, and runs 1,000 watts on CW running up down Highway 9. He said, I talk to anybody I want to.
CW, you meant CB. And I have met that gentleman years ago down here, and I went over and asked him about it. I can't remember. I thought it was a black guy, but I don't remember. But I remember that Suburban and those those antennas, and he did a fine job of mounting those on that roof, too.
Yeah, this was a white guy, and the Suburban is deep blue.
There's not another one like it around. Well, I couldn't remember if it was or not, but, yeah, I used to talk on CB back in the early 70s, and you'd hear him calling from the Motor City in Pontiac, Michigan, and you could always tell by the accent, you know. And there were some really nice people on there back then. I don't think it's used much anymore except for trail riders and, you know, Jeeps and stuff like that, and running the boonies, and the truck drivers now. But I went across I-70 from Kansas to Washington, D.C. several times, and they were very helpful.
Well, it seems like he used to have three big antennas on that thing, but he just had two on it yesterday, so I don't know if I remember wrong or if he's changed his configuration.
Right, you remember, Bernice, you remember seeing that one, don't you? Oh, she don't remember it. She's not an antenna person. I love antennas. Shoot. There used to be one, Phil, talking about unusual, and this one's sad. It was south of Joplin, Missouri, on the way to Springfield, and they had one of those rigs on the side of the tower that this gentleman had made, and there's a name for those. And you could have a winch to pull you up. Well, he didn't. His wife would sit on the tractor and drive the tractor and pull him up on that cable. And one day, that cable threw her off and jerked the seat off of the tractor, and he fell 200 feet. And everybody in that area knew that story. But I think of that every time I went past that one, Phil.
What was he trying to do? Just sit up there with a walkie-talkie or something? Why did he want to stay up there?
Oh, no. He had big HF antenna arrays. I forget what that one, a Hazer or something like that. There were chairs that adhered to the side of the towers, and you could go up and work on your stuff up there. He had a nice array of HF antennas, and it was a full 200-foot tower, which was, at that time, I don't know anymore. It's been so long since I took my test. That was the maximum height that you could have.
Well, I wonder how that passed his guy wires, because he had to have guy wires at 200 feet.
I don't know. I've not seen many of those, Phil, and never up close. You'd have to ask somebody who's knowledgeable on them, but they may still be available. I suppose they wrote the rails of the tower up. You know, you'd have to be up close to it. Heck, there was some of the guys had rotating towers, and I think those are guide. But I just never been around that big of an array, and it was driving down I-44. It was off in the distance there. Probably a quarter to half a mile, so I really couldn't tell you if it did or not, but usually it would winch you up there. And then there was another thing that was unusual. They had the gears out of airplane motors to turn those towers somehow, prop feathering thing on some of them, to turn those rotating towers around. You'd have to ask somebody like K4SV or somebody like that that's been around a while. But I remember those, I think they were called hazers, and they'd go right up the side of the towers, Phil.
It does, but you can't be guide because it grabs all four sides of the tower and runs up and down. I almost bought a hazer one time, kind of intrigued with that. But like I say, you can't have guy wires. You could have some, I guess, right at the very top and run the hazer up and not, you know, go beyond that. But that's a pretty neat device. There's a guy in Georgia that makes a much better version of the hazer. He calls it the Razor. And hazers, at one time, they got to where they would jam, and you'd have to have somebody climb the tower to get them free. And this guy just built a heavy-duty version of the hazer. And I almost bought one, but I had some Ron 55, which is commercial. It sure enough is heavy. It's 100 pounds per section. And I was going to buy one for that. You have to buy it for a specific tower because, you know, it has to fit the tower specifically. But just never did that, never went that route. But Ron 25, is, if it's properly guided, I think the specs, they say you can go up 190 feet. And Ron 45 to almost 400 feet, but it's got to be guide commercially.
Take your word for it. You know more about it than I do, Phil. I just know that that's what happened to him, and the seat come off of the tractor anyways, and when it did, it released him, and he fell to 200 feet. I don't know what his call was. You know, they were 35, 40 miles south of where we lived at. And it was, to my understanding, it was a homemade rig. So might not have been something bought, and that might have been the flaw in the apple core there.
Down here in North Carolina, there was a commercial TV tower, and I forget how tall it was. It was something unbelievable. And there were five guys on it, and it buckled and fell and killed all five of them. And they were high enough up, they had, you know, several seconds to realize they were going to die. That must have been horrifying.
Phil Rankin, I can say this now, he's passed away, K0PR. He owned most of our repeater gear and stuff like that, and he ran the internet service there in Pittsburgh, Kansas, and he had those pager systems. I used to have to carry a pager all the time, and he'd tell me how many watts he was transmitting, and it was way over the amount that he was allowed. But they had one up on the cable TV tower, 750 feet, and his tower climber had done it for many years, and he said, "Don't you ever tell this, Tom, because, well, it's been many years ago now." But as he was in the cable TV tower just south of town, and then KOAM TV had a 1,100-foot tower with a traveling wave tube on top of that. And anyways, that's where our repeater was for years. But the cable TV tower is where he had his paging system. And his tower climber was at the top of that, and the winch that took him up, I don't know, had an external load brake on it or not or what. It fails, and I think Phil said it dropped him like 180, 200 feet before he could get it stopped, and it was smoking. And he said that guy never wanted to climb a tower again.
See that? I never was a big tower climber. I went up a 50-foot tower when I was a teenager, and the top of it was not very big, and that thing was swaying back and forth about 3 or 4 inches, and I said, that's enough for me, and I went back down. But yeah, have you ever looked at YouTube videos of these guys that climb TV towers?
it really takes the wind out of your sails. There was a repeater west of Wichita that they said was on a 1,400-foot tower, and I can't tell you whose it was, but it was the 146940, I think, repeater. And I'd pick it up 165 miles away if there was a little ducting or something quite often, or in the springtime. But, yeah, my tower back home was 50 feet, and I took down... well, that one we took down, what was that guy's name, Bernice? There south of town? Archie Meeks. I took down his tower one time, and he wanted to make his like mine where he could raise it and lower it. And I had to use a gin pole on the side of the tower to take the sections apart, and I'd never done that before. I've taken down towers. But I kind of like heights, but you get up that high, it gets scary for anybody. I worked up high every day, up to 65 feet. I say every day, not necessarily. It's dependent, you know, lights, heating, overhead cranes, stuff like that. But my legs are still getting a little bit weak, and dependent on the situation you was in. But using that gym pole, when they cut them guy wires loose and that thing's swaying there, and you're down one section from the section you're taking off, if you're not scared, there's something wrong with you, Phil.
Things can go south in a hurry, and you got nowhere to go but down. Not fun, not fun. We used to have a donor at North Greenville that I was good friends with, and she owned the highest tower south of 85 in South Carolina. It was in Anderson. A little knoll down there, and she had everything on that tower that could be put on it. The FCC had loaded Lackland police and everything else, and this is 20 years ago. A guy got $2 a foot to climb the tower, and if he had to climb it twice in a day, he'd charge it twice, and it was a 250-foot tower, so way back 20 years ago, it was $500 to climb to the top and replace the lamp, the beacon. And I don't know how he worked it out, if he forgot something that he should have carried up. I don't know. But that long ago, it was $2 or $2.50 maybe a foot. So who knows what it is now, but they earn their money.
Yeah, I've seen them do that and replace lights and stuff on them. Our 146.94 there was down at Crestline, Kansas, which was the nearest little bitty town south of Pittsburgh in southeast Kansas. And it was up 880 feet, I think, on that 1,100-foot tower. And they'd start out climbing it of a morning, and there'd be a group go down there. I never did help with that one. I helped with the one that was 189 feet on top of the Hotel Bess in town, the 444.8. I climbed up on that tower a little bit, and that would scare the dickens out of you, but it was on top of a building. But when they'd go down there and work on that one at 880 feet, the repeater was up there. And if you get a lightning strike or something, or the repeater would go down, before they got the smarts, and I think it was 1.5 or 2 inch heliacs going up there. But that tower climber would just get a volunteer, and he'd climb it. It'd take him all day to go up there and come back down. But when they got up there, they let ropes down to haul the gear up with. And those ropes were so long, so you'd have to have, 2,000 foot of rope. They'd go clear out over Highway 69 when they were pulling that gear back up to that guy. And they told me about how they had to do it, and I thought, oh, my God. I volunteered for it once, and somebody went out over me. And, you know, I don't think I'd have had the guts. That's awful high. But I was willing to give it a try if nobody else was. But I never had to, thank God. They'd get back down, and it was starting to get dark by the time they got it done. This was in the summertime, of course, usually. Phil, we've arrived home, but I really enjoyed the QSO, and hope to see you down the line, and say hello to wife, and have the rest of the happy holidays, and talk to you later. MT4NGU in 0TR 73'sville.
Enjoyed it, Tom. And this lady was a dear friend of mine I was telling you about, and she's been passed since 2014, so I don't think she'd mind me telling you. Back then, she was making $110,000 a year rental off that tower. And there's no telling what it's renting for now, so they can be quite profitable. And she gave it to the guy that maintained it. She had extensive funds and left it to a number of causes. And but she gave that cotton picking thing to the guy that climbed it. Can you believe that? W4 never give up, Clear.
That was nice, Phil. There are good people still in this world. See you later in 0TR's Clear.